Coming up on Fronteras, as comprehensive immigration reform takes shape, gay and lesbian activists are working to make sure their ability to get green cards for their same-sex spouses isn't overlooked.
It will not be comprehensive unless LGBT families are included.
Same-sex couples are fighting to be included in an immigration reform bill. Also on the program, the new Somali president called for Somali refugees in the United States to return to their homeland and help rebuild the nation. Will young Somalis who grew up in America heed his call?
Will there be a time I will live in Somalia permanently? Yes. And in fact, I can't wait for that day.
We hear from young refugees in San Diego who want to make the move to Africa. But first, the news. This is Fronteras, a journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras was created through an unprecedented multimedia collaboration among seven public radio stations. It's funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting as part of its local Journalism Center initiative. I'm Crystal Chavez. Marrying a U.S. citizen has long been the surest way for an immigrant to gain permanent residency in the U.S. But under current immigration law, this doesn't apply to all couples. UCLA researchers estimate some 40,000 couples risk being separated because that benefit doesn't extend to same-sex partners. From our Fronteras desk, Adrian Florido reports on why gay and lesbian activists are fighting to be included as immigration reform takes shape.
Jesus Rodriguez and William Wood's romance started in 2009 when they met in Atlanta. Last year, William got into a master's program at UC San Diego. Jesus moved out first to get a head start settling in. But on Labor Day weekend, he drove into a traffic checkpoint. He didn't have a license. He was arrested. He called William from the San Diego Police Detention Center.
Yeah, and I had to explain to him, and I said, you know, this is what happened. I said, oh my God. I said, I'm not going to get to see you ever again. He said, why? I said, well, they're going to deport me. He said, why? I said, because of this.
Jesus is undocumented. He overstayed a tourist visa in 1995 when he was visiting from Mexico, but he'd never told William, a U.S. citizen.
It was a little surprising.
And obviously he was like, he couldn't believe what I was saying, but you know, it's, well, why didn't you tell me? I said, well, because I was hoping that this would be solved with some sort of immigration reform that was going to take place.
He had hoped that eventually an immigration reform package like the one now being discussed in Congress would be approved and he'd be allowed to stay. But now he'd been caught. With a lawyer's help, he applied for a stay of deportation. He has a court hearing next month, but in the meantime, Jesus and William flew to Washington, D.C. to get married. This wouldn't help Jesus, because the federal law that makes it easy for the spouse of a U.S. citizen to get a green card doesn't apply to same-sex couples. That's forced many binational gay couples to split up. Jesus and William knew this, but they decided to get married anyway.
When did we prepare just in case?
Just in case President Obama's immigration reform agenda, which he unveiled in January and which includes a benefit for same-sex partners, prevails.
That was one of the main reasons, because we know things are changing, so we're hoping that that will also count towards that.
Jesus hopes that before he's forced out of the country, at least one of three things will happen. If a reform package includes a path to citizenship for the 11 million people in the country illegally, Jesus could stay that way. But he knew that would be a huge sticking point on Capitol Hill. So he figured that if a reform bill at least gave same-sex spouses immigration rights like the president wants, William could petition for him to stay that way. That's why they rushed to get married.
So I'm hoping that either that way or just the immigration reform as a whole will have either an opportunity for me.
There's a third possibility. The reason same-sex partners don't qualify for immigration and more than 1,000 other federal benefits is because of the Defense of Marriage Act, DOMA, which on a federal level defines marriage as between a man and a woman. The Supreme Court is expected to rule on DOMA's constitutionality this summer. If it's overturned, William could possibly sponsor Jesus even absent an immigration reform bill.
That's why it's very important for either DOMA to be repealed or in comprehensive immigration reform, every time the word spouse is mentioned, three more words is added, all permanent partners.
Amos Lim is part of a San Francisco-based coalition called Out for Immigration. He and other LGBT activists fear a benefit for permanent homosexual partners may be an early casualty in the debate over what immigration reform will look like. Unlike President Obama's proposal, the one unveiled by a bipartisan team of senators did not mention immigration benefits for gay couples. Here's what Senator John McCain said about his immigration priorities late last month.
LGBT or border security? I'll tell you what my priorities are. So, again, if you're going to load it up with social issues, that is the best way to derail it, in my view.
But Lim and activists across the country are sending the message that
it will not be comprehensive unless LGBT families are included.
For Jesus Rodriguez, whose deportation case is working its way through court, it's become a race against the clock to see which reform, if any, will allow him and his husband to stay together. In San Diego, I'm Adrian Florido.
The United States government officially recognized Somalia's government this month for the first time since 1991. Somalia has been called the world's most failed state, enduring deadly famines and more than two decades of civil war with al-Shabaab militants. Now the nation's rebuilding under a newly elected president, and Somalis in San Diego are eager to help. KPBS reporter Megan Burks spoke to a young refugee who says he can't wait to go back for good.
Somali refugees greeted new Somali president Hassan Sheikh Mohamud with cheers and dance in Minnesota last month. Mohamud urged members of the audience there to return to their homeland and help rebuild the nation. Minneapolis has the United States' largest Somali population. San Diego comes in second with more than 10,000 Somali refugees. 23-year-old Mohamed Ahmed is one of them. He says his president's message has sparked conversation here in San Diego, too.
The conversation, it's already among the community. People have already been back. People are planning to go back.
Ahmed left Somalia with his family when he was 2 months old and came to the U.S. at the age of four. He's now about to graduate from San Diego State University alongside other East Africans who arrived in America in the 90s. He says the timing for a revived Somali state couldn't be better.
There's a need for Somali doctors. There's a need for Somali nurses, engineers, entrepreneurs, even future young Somali politicians.
And Somalia has them. If you look to its diaspora, Ahmed will graduate with a degree in international security and conflict resolution. If his major and the perfectly pressed suit he wears aren't enough to hint at a future political career in Somalia, his vacation photos might be.
What we were doing as an organization in Somalia was exploring the educational facilities.
Photos from his trip to Somalia over winter break show Ahmed and other members of the SDSU-based group Cure Africa talking with dignitaries and posing with bright-eyed school children. Ahmed and his classmates are building a school there. They plan to return after graduation to cut the ribbon at the opening. But Ahmed says that's not the last he'll see of his country.
Well, as of right now, I want to continue my education, further my education, but will there be a time I will live in Somalia permanently? Yes, and in fact, I can't wait for that day.
Regardless of how Somalia turns out, you know, it's still a country that's one of the least developed countries in the world.
That's Abdi Mohamud. He's the executive director of the City Heights-based nonprofit Horn of Africa. He said he's not convinced many young Somalis will make the move to Africa.
The life they're going to have in Somalia is not going to be comparable to the life they're going to have in the United States. You'll see about 95% of those youth, they're going to make the United States their home. This is the only home they know.
Ahmed admitted he'd miss watching the Chargers play, but he insists he's Somali through and through. Each week, Ahmed hurries from the San Diego State campus to a mosque on a busy street corner in City Heights. It's in an area locals call Little Mogadishu because of the cluster of Somali shops and restaurants located there. Ahmed joins fellow East Africans there for Friday prayers. The imam, the Somali cab drivers, the shop owners, they all seem to know him.
To me, I feel like I have the best of two worlds. I have the American culture and I have the Somali culture. My parents worked hard to keep my Somali heritage in place with me.
And Ahmed says it's that blended upbringing that has prepared him for a future in a changing Somalia.
This American culture gave me the ability to work with people and to live alongside with other people from different walks of life.
So will more young refugees heed President Mohamud's call for help? I asked Ahmed's classmate, Yosef Abraham, if he has plans to one day work in his family's homeland.
My major is actually in criminal justice, and originally, when I went into that field, I wanted to do something with federal law enforcement. But since I started Care Africa, my focus has kind of shifted a little bit, and I think I found what I really want to do in my heart, and it's doing humanitarian work.
Sounds like it might not be the Somali president's call to action so much as that strong desire to change the world so many leave college with. And lucky for these soon-to-be graduates, they have a world ripe for quick and visible change in their homeland. In San Diego, I'm Megan Burks.
Coming up on Fronteras, as veterans come home from war, many will decide to enroll in college. Most are not your typical student.
It was kind of a scary experience, you know, going to school with kids half your age. First class I walked into, I sat down and everybody was just looking at me like, what's this old guy doing in class?
Next up, listen to what a university in New Mexico is doing to better accommodate student veterans. Stay tuned. This is Fronteras. I'm Crystal Chavez. The transition into college is hard enough for most students. It's even harder for military veterans whose life experience differs greatly from their peers. In the last decade, about 1 million soldiers have come home from war, some who end up in the Southwest, where colleges are slowly finding ways to better accommodate them. Monica Ortiz Uribe reports on a new university housing model in New Mexico, especially for veterans.
The dorm experience is a staple of college life. Inside the lobby of Garcia Hall at New Mexico State University in Las Cruces, students are pumped after a victory by their basketball team. They gather around a pool table in ripped jeans and nylon shorts that sag below their waist. These students are only a couple years out of high school. They're preoccupied with the opposite sex and the latest MP3 on their phone. These interests are not shared by 46-year-old Tony Cano, a veteran of the U.S. Army and Marine Corps. He served as an infantry soldier and later a platoon sergeant overseeing missions in the Middle East and Asia. Cano is now pursuing a teaching degree.
It was kind of a scary experience, you know, going to school with kids half your age. First class I walked into, I sat down and everybody was just looking at me like, what's this old guy doing in class?
The gap between student veterans and their civilian peers is wide. Even some of the youngest vets have witnessed the death and destruction of war. Others struggle with life-altering injuries, and many have families. Cano quickly realized that he wasn't the only student vet uncomfortable with on-campus housing. So last fall, he and others pitched an alternative to the university housing department.
So these are our standard two-bedroom, one-bath houses.
Julie Weber is the housing director at New Mexico State here in southern New Mexico. She's showing off a single-family home near the main campus.
They have a living room, kitchen, one bathroom, and then two bedrooms.
Starting this month, a section of this housing will be reserved especially for student veterans like Tony Cano. These are actual homes built in a neighborhood-like setting. They date back to World War II and are kind of crude. 900 square feet of beige, cinder block walls, and mismatched tile floors. It's the families who move in that bring the warmth. 9-year-old Rachel Fang plays the piano inside one of the houses in the neighborhood where the veterans will live. She moved here from China with her parents, both doctoral students.
Jump on the trampoline, we play tag, we do a lot of stuff, activities.
These houses have their own driveways and even a backyard.
We plant tomatoes, potatoes, squash, and peas.
This housing will allow veterans to live near each other and have space for their families and even their dogs. Some vets bring home dogs that served with them overseas. Michael Dakduk, who heads the national nonprofit Student Veterans of America, thinks it's a great model.
It's supportive because it shows that the university still wants them to be a part of that campus culture and add value to it.
More than 800 student veterans nationwide are taking advantage of the post-9/11 GI Bill, which helps with school-related expenses. Still, Dakduk says veterans are a minority on campus, just 4% of most student bodies.
I worry that support for veterans may begin to wane. That's why it's absolutely critical that we institutionalize programs and resources and policies like what happened in New Mexico.
Many colleges are competing to attract student vets. Some, like San Diego State, have already converted frat houses for veterans. Others, like Ohio State, are following the more family-friendly model. That school is set to open 11 on-campus apartments this fall for veterans and their families. In Las Cruces, I'm Monica Ortiz Uribe.
For 35 years, San Antonio's Guadalupe Cultural Arts Center has screened movies and hosted conferences encouraging Latinos to tell their stories. Jim Mendiola is Cine Festival's director. He sat down with David Martin Davies.
Cine Festival is the Guadalupe Cultural Arts Center annual film festival. We show the best and most contemporary Latino film. We've been doing it for 35 years, and this year it runs from Saturday, February 23rd to Saturday, March 2nd, and we'll have film screenings, panels, stars are going to visit, and a lot of world premieres and regional premieres of films.
Every year, there's generally one big screening that people are very excited about, although there are a lot of screenings throughout the week, but this is the main one. Which is that one?
This year, we're really excited about a movie called The Girl, which is by David Riker. David Riker is a New York-based filmmaker who's gone through the Sundance Lab and has screened all over the world with a movie called La Ciudad. He hasn't made a movie in 10 years, and he's finally come out with this one. And it's set in Texas, and it's set in the Texas-Mexico border region. And you're going to be able to see it a month or two before its national release.
This film, it's a beautiful film. It's, you know, the visuals are fantastic. But isn't it set in San Antonio in some parts?
Yes. It starts in Texas and it ends up in Mexico. And he filmed here, he filmed on the border, he filmed in around Austin.
And it takes on some very contemporary issues.
Yeah, it's about immigration and it's about reckoning with it. And it tells it through a very emotional and interesting story about a woman who is down on her luck economically. This movie is good because it's reflecting a lot of the current situation with down economy. So this woman has to find a job and ends up smuggling undocumented workers across the border and gets caught and ends up taking care of one of them that's left behind. It's a little girl. And so she has to take her back to Mexico.
Why don't you give me a raise?
You didn't get a raise because of your attitude.
What's wrong with my attitude?
Mommy. Hi. I just had to see him. A quick visit.
Nobody wants to see you reunited with your son more than I do. He needs his
mother. You know, the only reason you got my Georgie and not me is because of money.
Jesus, Dad. What are you doing here?
Your daddy's running to a streak of luck. Hey, let's celebrate. You come back with me. Stay overnight.
To Mexico?
Well, ain't far. It's only a couple hours. Come on. How's my princess?
I think there's someone in the truck.
Yeah, there's people back there, but I don't know who they are, and I don't ask.
Hey, American girl. Hay que llevar unos amigos a Austin. Llevas $500 por cada uno. Are you interested?
Quiero a mi mamá.
What have you done? You must be out of your mind.
What am I supposed to do?
Drop her at the corner. And you never look back.
Cine Festival has been around for 35 years. Over the course of those years, it's become instrumental in helping local talent develop, and that continues today. And how are we seeing where that talent is today on the screen at the Cine Festival?
What's great about Cine Festival this year is it's really a reflection of the talent that's in the city. In the past, we've usually had programs that we would say, these are the local San Antonio films, come and see them. This year, we didn't have to do that. These filmmakers and their work kind of spoke for themselves and, in fact, competed nationally and internationally with the films that came in and won awards. So we have several award-winning films that were made by local filmmakers. So it, again, it reflects this maturity of the local filmmaking scene here, and you can come out and see their work and meet the filmmakers.
What are some of the films that local filmmakers have produced that you're going to be screening?
Our opening night film is a movie called Mission Park, which is going to be a world premiere. That was made by a guy named Brian Ramirez. It's a thriller cop movie, but it has this most amazing visuals of San Antonio. You see the city in a way that you've never really seen before, and especially on screen. So that's a really interesting work. We have a movie called Have You Seen Marie by Ray Santisteban, and it's about Sandra Cisneros and her new book that came out. And it's a nice, really poignant, kind of nostalgic view of what's happening in this city. There's good and bad with this transformation and all this amazing development that's happening, but sometimes there's things that are lost. And this movie sort of reflects that. It's a nice piece, and that's going to screen Saturday night before a movie called Philly Brown.
The book is about her sense of loss of her mother and dealing with that, but also just the neighborhood going through so many changes with the expansion of the River Reach and the popularization of Southtown.
Exactly. There's, you know, on one level, they talked to Sandra Cisneros, the author, and she's lived in that neighborhood for many years and has seen the transformation happen. And, of course, is very happy about Mission Reach and the restaurants that are happening. But at the same time, you know, some of the character of the old neighborhood seems to be gone. And so there's that tone that's kind of reflected in the whole piece. And it's a nice reflection of stopping and considering what's happening and not saying it's bad, but, you know, trying to remember what used to be there.
So with Cine Festival, it's dedicated to Latino filmmakers. Why is that important?
I think it's really important that we maintain this this focus on Latino films, because we still haven't seen the demographics reflected either in TV or films. And it's important to promote talent and the work that's going to do that. And so that's why it's necessary still.
Jim Mendiola is the director of Cine Festival, which for 35 years has fostered Latino filmmaking and the understanding of how Latinos are portrayed in film and broadcast. For more information, visit GuadalupeCulturalArts.org. You've been listening to Fronteras, a Corporation for Public Broadcasting funded journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras is a collaboration of public radio stations KJZZ Phoenix, KPBS San Diego, KNAU Flagstaff, KNPR Las Vegas, KRWG Las Cruces, KUAZ Tucson, and KSTX San Antonio. Fronteras is online at fronterasdesk.org. We're on Facebook. We invite you to join the conversations there and post your thoughts about our stories. For headlines and updates, follow us on Twitter. Our handle is fronterasdesk. You can also subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Our theme music was composed by Charanga Cakewalk. I'm Texas Public Radio's Crystal Chavez. Thank you for listening.